When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There has been so much talk about the quarterback position this offseason for Seattle. How good is Geno Smith? Would Drew Lock stick around as backup? Should the Seahawks move up and draft a quarterback in this draft or later on? Well, they addressed their backup quarterback position today, trading for Sam Howell, last year's starter for the Washington Commanders. How do I feel about that move? Of course, we'll get into that. Could he be much more than just a backup? The Seahawks also addressed their blackest of black holes on the roster currently, inside linebacker, signing a guy who's an ascending player and who projects as a starter on the inside. We'll talk about Terrell Dotson today as well. Some big news on Seahawks Forever today.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
You know, being a guy who has a career and sometimes gets in the way of doing this for all of you, the Sam Howell news broke today as I was arriving at work. And that was frustrating because, of course, what I would have wanted to do is react immediately and connect with you all and get your thoughts on it and dive in and do all the research and get all the reaction. And then shortly after that, the news of Terrell Dotson being signed to play inside linebacker today at the same time. However, once I got a feel, once I checked the pulse of Twitter and the Seahawks fan base and saw how immediately divisive the Sam Howell trade was, I was kind of glad. I felt pretty blessed that I was going to have a 5 or 6 hour distraction in order to avoid all of the heat online. I'm going to break down all of my thoughts on the Sam Howell trade and Terrell Dotson and where the roster stands as of now coming up. You can follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. If you're watching this on YouTube, of course, like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell button so you're always notified of new episodes. If you listen on audio platforms, wherever you listen, hit subscribe so that I'm in the library, you get those notifications. And if you want to hear these episodes without any ads in them whatsoever, you can go to Spotify. I'll put the link in the description. It costs less than $1 a month right now to sign up for that, and you get exclusive ad-free episodes. And if you just want to support the show and me, you can buy me a beer or a coffee. Link below as well. So Sam Howell is now your backup quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks after Drew Lock spent the last two seasons here. And all the talk this offseason of the Seahawks wanting Lock to return, and he signs with the New York Giants for $6 million earlier this week. John Schneider was on his radio show on Seattle 710 Sports today, and we got a lot of insight there. And one of the things that he did mention is they wanted Drew Lock back, as they had been talking all offseason. And it sounds like money wasn't the determining factor. He didn't say, we wanted Drew back, but the Giants offered more money. I think the Seahawks paid Lock $4.5 million last year. The Giants gave him $6 million this year. What he said was the Giants did a really good job of convincing him that he had a shot to compete for the starting job there, even when Daniel Jones comes back from his torn ACL. It was an opportunity for Lock. And so they had to pivot. They had to find another quarterback. And many of you have suggested that they just draft a guy. But going into the season, into an NFL season, where practice reps are so much more limited now, with your primary backup as a, let's just say a mid-round quarterback, let's just set aside the idea of taking a guy in the first round. That's risky. You know, if Geno Smith were to go down again and your team's playing well at any level under first-year coach Mike McDonald, you have a chance to compete. You're going to hand that over to a guy who's never played. That's tough. That's risky. And it's not what the Seahawks have generally done under John Schneider. And up until this year under Pete Carroll, they prefer the veteran backup route. For the most part, there have been exceptions. Was it Trevon Boykin that they started the season with 1 year as their primary backup? But it's Tavares Jackson. It's, you know, it was going to be Tavares Jackson, Matt Flynn 1 year, Charlie Whitehurst, guys that are veterans. And then, of course, Geno Smith, a guy that they just kept coming back or bringing back on one-year deals year after year. And then Drew Lock the last 2 years. They prefer a guy that's played before over the unknown and the kid with upside, right? Now, if they had intended to acquire a quarterback in the first round, maybe it's a different story. Most of the guys that are projected to go early in this draft have quite a bit of experience. And so they make this move. And what's interesting about this is early in the day, news broke that the Atlanta Falcons were exploring trades for Desmond Ridder, third-year player out of the University of Cincinnati. And immediately there were connections and thoughts that maybe Seattle's in the mix. And I tweeted out right away, I wonder if it's Seattle. Would be a nice low-cost way to fill your backup quarterback spot with a guy that we knew the Seahawks were interested in that draft because they had him in for a top 30 visit. And then 2 minutes later, it was announced that he was traded to the Cardinals for Rondale Moore. Well, then I tweeted, and I tweeted several times today, some as my own native tweets and others as replies, that Sam Howell made a lot of sense. I said this a couple weeks ago. I talked in 2022 about how much I like Sam Howell as a guy in the mid rounds for Seattle that I thought fit. I remember Rob Staton, who does such a great job on his Seahawks draft blog and put so much work into draft study, thought that Howell was a fit that year because he threw one of the best deep balls in the draft, and that was something that Pete Carroll really valued, and John Schneider as well. And then, so when the Howell trade broke, you can imagine my excitement as, you know, anytime you want something to happen or predict it's going to happen, certainly it excites you even more. I've told this story before, but the year that the Seahawks took Owen Schmidt, I think it was in the sixth round as a fullback out of West Virginia. He was just such a draft crush of mine that year, and that was the Mike Holmgren era. They actually used a fullback and all of that, and I just loved the player and everything he stood for. I remember I was at work managing a sports bar at the time, and it was early. We had just opened, and nobody was in there. I was jumping up and down, screaming and yelling. So anytime one of our guys gets acquired by our team, we get excited about it, right? And so I thought that was cool. But immediately the backlash that I saw online, frankly, took me by surprise. I mean, some anger. People were yelling, literally, fire John Schneider. This offseason is a debacle, a travesty, a failure. I couldn't figure out where that came from. So again, I was glad I had some time to chew on this a little bit. I think I understand it a little bit more now. Fans who have become draft nerds and the types of fans who really, really love the offseason, some don't. A lot of people that you see and hear in the stadium every Sunday don't pay attention to the league between January and July. They just don't. They love their team. They're no less of fans than we are. And they love the games, but it's an in-season passion for them. And then there are those, and there are more of us than ever because of the access that we now have that are draft nerds and that love the things that I love. The team-building aspect of this, the offseason is as exciting, if not more, than the regular season. And for those of you watching, that's probably one of the reasons that you were drawn to this show in the first place, because you could see from the content that I produce and the things that I do and the topics that I broach in the off season that it's something that I love. And so it's, you know, it's naturally going to attract people that are interested in that as well. Draft nerds fall in love with their prospects that they like. Draft nerds unite, by the way. And they also fall in love with draft picks and the prospect of the trade capital in this case, which is basically a pick swap. The Seahawks moving down from their mid third rounder to the top of the fourth round, 24 spots. They go from 78 to 102. And then they drop out of the fifth round into the sixth round. They swap. They go from 152 to 179. A combination of that, that some fans are worried that that will, it's the opportunity cost, right? That will cost us an opportunity to draft the linebacker that they think that we need or that they like. And yeah, of course, there's going to be 24 players taken off the board before the Seahawks pick at 102 that they could have had at 78. That's just math. But it's acquisition cost as well. And the value of a backup quarterback is not nothing. It's significant. And veteran backup quarterbacks these days cost money. Look what, you know, even guys that can start, look what Gardner Minshew just signed for, right? Look what Drew Locke got. Ryan Tannehill hasn't signed yet. A guy like that is probably going to command $4 to $6 million. Look what Andy Dalton's made the last couple of years in the league. If you want a veteran backup, you're going to have to pay for him. The alternative is to draft one, but as I mentioned earlier, it's a crapshoot. It's harder to develop quarterbacks now in the league. They don't get a lot of practice reps. So what I thought I would do is just kind of go through and look at both sides of the argument. And one of the biggest concerns is also the player himself. Fifth round pick 2 years ago out of North Carolina, 3 year starter, a guy that after his first year as a full-time starter was projected as a potential first round pick in the future. And then of his three seasons in college, his third season was the least prolific. And a guy that did some good things on the field last year, but also did some bad things. He's that classic young quarterback that if you want to put a highlight reel together, you can. You can make him look really good. If you want to put a low light reel together, you can, and you can make him look really bad. And I saw some of that on Twitter yesterday. I wish I would have had time to answer it with some highlight stuff. But the first thing that people are drawn to and that they want to point out is that he led the NFL in interceptions last year with 21. That's true. There's no getting away from that. He's not the only young quarterback that has thrown interceptions in NFL history. I'll get into that a little bit more in a moment. He's 23 years old. He started 18 games in the NFL. He had those 21 interceptions, not too far off from, you know, some other guys were right on his tail. Josh Allen with 18. You know, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, much more established, experienced quarterbacks. Not that far off when you take attempts into consideration and you look at it as a percentage, an interception rate. Because he also led the NFL in attempts with 612. That works out to a 3% interception rate. Josh Allen's interception rate, 3%. Hurts and Mahomes, about 2.3%. Not that far off. I have some bullet points here that I threw together of some good, some bad, but relevant facts. According to PFF, led the NFL in big-time throws with 30. Led the NFL with big-time throws. Threw for almost 4,000 yards, 3,946 to be exact, 12th in the NFL. Had two game-winning drives on a team that only won four games. Was sacked an NFL leading 65 times. Offensive line at the end of the year was ranked by PFF as the 24th best offensive line in football. But yet over his last three starts, didn't get sacked. So that one of the one of the criticisms of him out there, in addition to just the interceptions, is holds on to the ball too long. Well, over the last three games, he got better at that. He can also run a little bit, 48 rushes, 265 yards, five touchdowns on the ground, threw 21 touchdowns as well. Had some bad games. Go look at the Bills game. Zero touchdowns, four interceptions. Looked bad. Had some good games. We saw him here in Seattle. Over 300 yards, three touchdowns. Drove him down at the end. Almost won the game. 388 yards, two touchdowns against the Bears. 400 yards and four touchdowns against the Eagles. And I came home tonight and I watched the all 22, every snap of the Eagles game. Some good stuff on there. You see a guy that's tough, that stands in the pocket, that isn't jittery. You see a guy that can stand in there and throw in-breaking middle of the field intermediate routes, which I call NFL throws. Those are things that kind of separate, to me, some of the college quarterbacks. Some just can't or won't make those throws. There's a throw in that Eagles game where he stands in the pocket and gets blasted as he's throwing the football and throws a dime right on the money, 35 yards downfield inside the five to Logan Thomas. Outstanding throw. There's good and bad. But that's what young quarterbacks do. Playing quarterback in the NFL is really freaking hard. It's hard. Which is why it's one of the hardest evaluations in pro sports. It's one that GMs routinely get wrong. Top 10 quarterbacks fail quickly. Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, etc., etc., etc. Mid-round quarterbacks succeed. Mr. Irrelevant is an MVP candidate. It's hard. It's hard to project these guys. Washington didn't do him any favors last year either. You have a first-time, full-time starter on a team with a bad offensive line. Let's throw it more than any other team in the league. Let's not try to establish a ground game, even though we have a couple of talented running backs. Let's just have him drop back and throw it over and over again. Top half of the league in first down pass rate. With an offensive coordinator that is first time having autonomy calling plays in Eric Bieniemy. Maybe he wasn't very good at that. Again, I watched that every snap of that Eagles game before I recorded this when I came home tonight, and I saw a very unimaginative offense. It may not be a surprise that Bieniemy got zero job offers in the NFL, went to college, and is now working at UCLA. Eight games of 40 passing attempts or more for Howell last year. Two games of 50 passing attempts or more. When NFL teams know you're going to throw the football on every down and you don't have a good offensive line, that's tough. That's tough. Mistakes are going to be made. Young quarterbacks fail. They do dumb things. I posted on Twitter today the interception totals, not just for their first full year as starters, but for their first 8, 9, 10 years in the league, of a couple of Hall of Famers, Peyton Manning and John Elway. Threw a lot of picks, man. I'm not saying Sam Howell is going to be John Elway or Peyton Manning. I'm just saying if all you do is look at that number and say, what are we doing? Why did we acquire this guy? You're doing it wrong, in my opinion. Also, many of the same people who were pounding the table for us to bring back Drew Lock and also arguing that he's better than Geno Smith and should be given a chance to be the starter. What was Drew Lock known for early in his career? His second year in the league, he started 13 games, very similar career arc to Sam Howell. 16 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, a 3.3 interception rate. He only completed 57% of his passes. Sam Howell completed 64% of his passes last year. I'm just saying. And, you know, you look at college because the best way to project, this is another point that I'd like to make today, like football is about projection. It's not about what you did yesterday. It's not about, I mean, I had so many people today tell me 21 interceptions last year. Look at that. That's his resume. It's projection. If every player in the NFL was judged only on what he did poorly his rookie year, where are we going with that? How many guys would be left out and not get a chance to develop at any position? It's just amplified at quarterback because it gets the most attention. It's the thing that we think we all understand because we see it on every snap, right? But part of projection is seeing a skill set in college. We hear this all the time coming up around the draft time, that completion percentage, we heard this a lot last year around Will Levis. Completion percentage is something that projects pretty accurately to the NFL. If a guy's a 55, we heard this a lot last year as well about Anthony Richardson. If a guy's a 55% completion percentage guy in college, chances of him becoming a 65% NFL completion percentage type quarterback, historically, not great odds. Well, in college, Sam Howell, in 3 years as a full-time starter, only threw 23 interceptions. 7 interceptions twice, 9 interceptions once. Completed 64% of his passes, better than a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. 92 touchdowns, 23 interceptions, which works out to a 2% interception rate. 23 picks in 1,117 attempts. Now let's talk about the trade value, because that's the other thing that's upset some people, right? And I did a little homework here for you. I've heard this multiple times today, listened to a podcast on the way home, read some analysts, some of the people I respect the most, and some who I actually, I'm not going to name drop, but I actually was surprised they didn't like this move. And this is one of the criticisms from them. We gave up a 3rd-round pick. Pick number 78 to pick number 102 on the Rich Hill trade value chart, which is based on historical actual draft trade data, is 25 points. 25 points is equivalent to a mid 4th-round pick. So we didn't give up a 3rd-round pick. We give up a 3rd in exchange for a 4th, which is the equivalent to a mid 4th-round pick. It's even less impactful with the 5th to the 6th. 152 to 179 is 8 points. That's equivalent to a middle of the 7th-round pick. So if I were to tell you that the Seahawks had kept that pick, number 78, and kept 152, kept that 3rd and 5th, and traded their 4th and 7th to Washington for Howell, would you be happy with that? Because I think, based on some of the criticism I heard today, some of the answers would be, yeah, that sounds more reasonable to me. A 4th and a 7th, okay, I can live with that. That leaves you with 5 draft picks this year. So you acquire Howell, but now you have 5 picks in the entire draft. They still have 7 picks. Also, the other aspect of this is, because I've heard this today too, well, I would rather that they had just taken pick 78 and drafted a quarterback. Again, told you about how difficult that is. But also, I just don't like any of the 3rd-round quarterbacks in this draft. I showed you my rankings, and after the top 6, there's a massive cliff. Massive cliff. Who are the guys projected as 3rd-round picks in this draft? That's about where everybody has Spencer Rattler going, right? Some have Joe Milton going there. That seems to be another favorite pick. Maybe Michael Pratt in some drafts. Maybe Jordan Travis if he's back from the leg injury. That's about it. Big drop off after that even. That's kind of the 3rd tier. I don't like either of those guys more than Sam Howell. I don't think either of those guys has a better chance to be a good NFL starter. And by the way, for the record, Lance Zierlein, who does such a great job running the online, you know, NFL scouting on NFL.com. And he's also a regular contributor on the Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah. he graded Howell as a guy who will, I forget the numerical grade, but with his system, it's all tied to tiers and levels of how, what they think those players will achieve in their career. And he said, the grade that he gave Sam Howell would be eventually will be an average starter in the NFL. Average starters in the NFL are really hard to find, you guys. So I thought that was telling. Spencer Rattler is a guy with some arm talent, but I didn't think he looked great at the combine. And guess what? He and Sam Howell are the same age. Within days of each other. Their birthdays are like 8 days apart. They're both 23 years old. Will turn 24 in September. Similar size. Actually, Howell's about an inch taller, 6'1", 220. Rattler's barely 6 foot, but sturdy, like Howell. They're both kind of thick. But yet Sam Howell has started 18 games in the NFL. Like, that's valuable experience. You like Joe Milton better? First of all, I see a really big arm on Joe Milton. I don't see any it factor. I don't see any savvy. I don't see any ability to create or improvise or move around at all. He's 24 years old and he's only had 17 starts in college. Sam Howell is a year younger and has had one more start in the NFL than Joe Milton has had in college. And guess what? And this is the part, I had a hunch, I checked it out. Sometimes you have a hunch and you research it and you realize you're wrong. Not this time. If you take one of those guys at pick 78, based on the NFL slotting system, they'll cost more money than Sam Howell will. Sam Howell's cap hit this year is just over $1 million. He signed through 2025. His cap hit increases to about 1.2 in 2025. That's so dirt cheap for a backup quarterback. A mid-third round pick, their cap hit is going to be about $1.5 million a year. It's, to me, it's a very low-risk move to acquire a backup quarterback without using significant cap space when you have other needs yet to address. And here's the kicker, you guys. It does not preclude the team from taking a quarterback if things fall a certain way on the draft. If the 16th pick comes around, even if John Schneider has plans as he sits here today to trade down and pick up more picks, if a certain quarterback falls to 16 and John looks up at his whiteboard and that guy's at the top of his board, if somehow there's people who think Drake May might fall, if he's Aaron Rodgers this year and he drops to 16, or J.J. McCarthy does, it doesn't mean they won't consider drafting him. Remember 2012? Tavarius Jackson, the incumbent starter. They signed Matt Flynn, gave him a significant free agent contract, still drafted a guy named Russell Wilson in the third round. It could happen. Now, I'll say this, though. I don't think it will, and I don't think it should, because there are bigger needs. I'll touch on that a little bit more in a minute. I do think it can. This does signal, though, that it is more likely today, I believe this, than it was 24 hours ago, that John is going to go into this draft looking to trade down. And if you say, yeah, I get it, but it's tough to find a partner sometimes. It takes two to tango. You don't think John Schneider's had conversations with other organizations already? At the Combine, Senior Bowl, all his connections. He's talked openly the last couple of weeks about intel he gets from other teams. His hiring of Mike McDonald came directly from other teams who interviewed him as part of their coaching searches that reached out to him and said, this guy's great. And it goes back to evaluation. This wasn't a knee-jerk move by John Schneider. He also said there were other teams in competition. They were sweating it out. They had to work hard today to get Sam Howell. There were other teams interested. But Schneider really, really liked Sam Howell. He talked about that in the 2022 draft, really liked him, to which I've had people ask me today, well, then if he liked him so much, why wouldn't he take him? Well, do you remember the 2022 draft? Do you remember what was happening that year? They had just made the Russell Wilson trade. They just acquired Drew Lock. They had other needs. They're transitioning away from a franchise quarterback. That's the year they took Charles Cross, Boye Mafe, Kenneth Walker, Abe Lucas in the third. You're not going to take Howell instead of any of those guys that year, right? Maybe in the middle of the fourth round when you take Kobe Bryant. But cornerback was a need, so much so that in the fifth they turned around again and took Reek Woolen. So maybe they take Howell there. How many of you would have been upset that they did that right after acquiring Drew Lock? And then one last point. The other thing that I've seen today is, well, if he was that good, why'd the Commanders trade him? Because they're a team fully rebuilding and they have the second pick in the draft. If I had a chance at Jaden Daniels, Drake May, I'd take him over Sam Howell too. But you know you're going to take a quarterback. They signed Marcus Mariota as a veteran backup. And they had an opportunity to get some assets, some draft, valuable draft assets in return. So to me, that means nothing. Brand new regime, new coaching staff, new GM, everything. The last regime, you know, believed in Sam Howell, didn't make a quarterback move last year, believed in him enough to give him a shot, and then they all got fired. In summary, I think it's very little risk, very little reason to wring your hands over this. Talented young backup with tons of upside and some traits. That's what this is all about, right? Potentially a high payoff. This could be what you were all hoping Drew Lock would be. This could be a guy that if he clicks with Ryan Grubb and Charles London, the quarterback coach, and they get the most out of this guy, and Geno Smith doesn't go earn all pro honors, they could have a guy, they could have found at worst their next bridge quarterback. Maybe even a guy that can start long term. It doesn't have to be, do you hate this or do you love this? But it's just one more piece of the puzzle putting this roster together and addressing a very, very important position. And I think they did this in a very savvy way. Let's get on to the next news of the day, because the Seahawks, up until today, after losing Jordan Brooks and letting Bobby Wagner walk away and not having any interest in bringing Devin Bush back, had zero linebackers on the roster with any starting experience. They fixed that today. They addressed that by signing Terrell Dodson away from the Buffalo Bills, unrestricted free agent. The Dodson file, he was an undrafted free agent out of Texas A&M, signed with the Bills in 2019, started five games over his first 3 years, but 10 games last year after Matt Milano got injured, and had a very, very solid season. Was named to the PFF All Breakout team after recording 74 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, 6 quarterback hits. And if you look at, he is a darling of the analytics world. He actually, if you go to PFF and if you subscribe, even at their lowest tier, and you can see player grades, he's the number one graded linebacker in the NFL for 2023. Number 3 in coverage, number 9 in run defense, but number 1 overall. He is 6 foot, 237 pounds and jacked. This is a guy that's really well put together. You know, in a draft year last year where most of the linebackers are 225 and look like coverage will linebackers, this guy looks the part. Go back and look at his combine numbers. Outstanding athlete. doesn't have any elite traits. He's not 90th percentile in anything, but a 4.6 yard 40 with a 1.61 10 yard split. And yet, as his physique would indicate, very strong as well with 24 reps at 225 in the bench press. So a guy that finally got his opportunity and made the most of it, an ascending player. We haven't seen the terms yet. I've seen some speculation. This is likely a multi-year deal, which would make sense. And I posited on Twitter that this reminds me a little bit of the Uchenna Nwosu signing. And somebody clapped back with like, no, Nwosu was a second round pick. Everybody knew who he was. He played at a big program. I get that. But what I mean by that is this is a value free agent signing of a player on the way up that the Seahawks clearly saw something in. And especially when you consider that there were other linebackers out there. Couple of former first round picks, guys like Devin White, Isaiah Simmons, who are still young and more elite athletically. But what has Mike McDonald specialized in throughout his career? And what does he base his scheme around? And he has had success evaluating and coaching and developing linebackers. He's a linebacker guy at heart. And this was the guy they decided to bring in. Now, there is a downside. Potentially, or at least not all is, you know, butterflies and rainbows. He does have some off-field history. In 2019, his rookie year, he suspended 6 games for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. There are some accusations of domestic violence. They aren't pretty. I'm not going to go into them here. You can Google them yourself. As a result, he entered into a diversion program and has not had a single incident or even a sniff of anything since that I can find. And their general manager, Brandon Bean, said the team, you know, did a thorough, I'll just read the quote from Brandon Bean. He says, a team investigation found no credible evidence of Dodson committing an act of domestic violence. He adds that the team's pre-draft evaluation of Dodson showed no history of him getting into legal trouble. Again, the details aren't pretty. Whatever happened that night wasn't good, but it appears to have been an isolated incident, and now 5 years have gone by, and he has kept himself together. So we'll see. It's, you know, that's clearly been an issue here with some players in the past. I don't want to make a big thing out of this. It doesn't seem to be a case of a bad dude that the Seahawks are signing just because they're desperate for a linebacker and they see some talent there. It would seem to me from everything I've looked into that this would appear to be a severe error in judgment and potentially some issues with substance, with alcohol that he's addressed. We'll see. I would think, again, that the contract would address that and reflect that a little bit and that there isn't a whole lot of risk here. So where does that leave the roster? I will, as I promised yesterday, but then this came up, I will put together a show in the next couple of days where I'll show you my updated grid of, you know, where I think roster spots are locked down, where they're moderately locked down or in fairly good hands, and then the glaring needs. And at this point, in just 4 days, I think you can make an argument that the only glaring needs, obvious glaring needs on this roster are left guard and the other inside linebacker spot. And if you get from here to the draft and you haven't really addressed either of those in any notable way, and that's the worst situation that you can imagine going into the draft. It's not a bad situation to be in when you consider that this is an outstanding offensive line draft as a group. More tackle than interior offensive line, but the first 3 or 4 rounds in this draft of interior offensive line, you can find plug-and-play starters. So if you're worried about that, that might have to be one of those things you address in the draft. And I know John Schneider said again today on his radio show, hey, we don't ever draft for need. We've gotten in trouble with that in the past. We're going to take best player available. Well, come on. the best player available when you're at 16 or you trade down to 24 or whatever, there's a good chance in this draft, this is what I'm saying, that the best player available also will fit an obvious need. And then linebacker, it's you'll hear some of the experts and analysts say it's not a great linebacker draft. I think that's a reflection of the lack of elite blue chip, obvious, you know, first, second round guys. But I think there's some depth and some really intriguing guys in the second round and beyond. And especially if the Seahawks trade down, pick up a couple extra picks, I think they're going to get a really good shot to add some of those guys that can make some impact and start as rookies. There's still some salary cap space left. There's still going to be some value free agent signings, guys that are going to settle for one-year deals and prove-it deals and try to build up their value and get back into the market next year. And my final note today, for any of you stressing out, freaking out about this roster right now or anything that you might perceive to be a weakness, check the calendar. As I look at my computer screen right now, it is March 15th. By at last check, I don't think the Seahawks have to play any games until September. That's going to do it for this one. Lots going on. If there's any more big news over the next couple of days, I'll react to that as quickly as I can. Lining up a couple of cool guests for next week. Stay tuned for that. The best way to get updates on that is to follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Also, subscribe in all the places and do all the things. Thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate it. Forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks again.